It's Friday, May 23rd, 2008, and you're listening to episode 101 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 57 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot, the podcast that asks if there's anything Barbershop Quartet can't do. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
My name is Matt.
My name is Chad. Ha, I got it.
Holy crap, he did
it. Wow, he got his own name right. How about that? For those of you that are wondering where episode 100 is, we have decided just to blow on past it. It is still coming out, but being our first video podcast ever, we found out that we do well at what we are practiced at. And I don't know if that was grammatically correct, but if you followed it, good enough. So
what you're saying,
yeah, we made the damn episode.
What I'm saying is, yeah, the episode went great, but visually there was not all that much going on. So Chris has come up with some really good ideas for sprucing it up visually.
He's going to add some zazz to it.
Some zazz, some nudity. And so,
oh no, that's in there. You just didn't see it.
There's stuff that we're trying to do to it, but it's going to take a while. So episode 100 is coming, but we're not going to wait for it. We're just going to keep on moving along, and 100 will drop when it drops, which will be obviously way out of sequence, but we don't want to leave the feed dead for the next 6 months while we become Dragon's Landing in, or we wait on episode 100 or whatever. So we're just going to keep on going.
In the parlance of the biz, principal photography is complete and it's now in production.
Luke's not here, so yeah. I'll just go ahead and pass along. There are cons he wants you to attend. And let's get right into the episode then. Now, these are from episode 100, which if you had heard the episode or seen the episode, you would know, but you haven't, so you don't.
Ironically, these questions are going to be answered on air before the ones we got to in the actual episode.
I know, which is funny because as we were going through all the questions that got sent in for episode 100, we answered the vast majority of them, but there were two we didn't answer because they were entirely too long to cover with 1 minute or 2 minute or 3 minute answers. And we said, we'll come back to those in a later episode. And well, welcome to the later episode, and the original hasn't dropped yet. So this episode is brought to you by a gentleman who signed off his questions as Gorka Morka, which was
from Sweden.
Actually, he's from one of Game Workshop's better games.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So he's from Orcs.
So he doesn't make a brand of high quality beef stew.
Between Gork and Mork, didn't somebody actually have a strong opinion on that?
No, Luke and I got in a fight.
Oh, really?
I proclaimed Gork forever, and he proclaimed Mork, I think.
So Jonathan the Winters versus Robin Williams?
I don't know about that. I think Gork is the god of death and destruction, and Mork is the god of destruction of death, or in death, or something like that. And that's the great theological war between the Orc tribes. Which one is greater?
So it's not a cocaine-wielding comedian playing up.
There's no Mork and Mindy.
I do remember in the second edition of 40K, one of the orc psyker powers.
Oh,
was
the foot template.
Yeah, yes. They had a foot template where it was either Gork or Mork, I can't remember which, would just stomp the battlefield. And just like you had blast templates and flamer templates, there was a foot template that you could just throw down on the field. And that's
the foot template was like actually a crater in the shape of a foot, and the ground was all burnt. There was like lightning arcing in between, like,
the toes and
stuff, and you left it on the ground. It was like this big crater, foot shaped crater. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was
back when 40K was like had some humor to it.
Well, yeah, it was a terribly imbalanced game, like it still is, but at least it was fun.
Yeah,
I would actually, when I repicked up the game in fourth edition, I was contemplating picking up the orcs until I heard they had basically taken all the humor out of them, and they were really now just Space Marines sans the powered armor, and so
with Cockney accents.
Yeah. Which
does red still make you go faster?
You know, speaking of the Cockney accent thing, am I the only American where upon picking up my first 40K book, I didn't catch that was Cockney?
I think so. I caught it when I was like 12 and picked it up the first time.
So, all right. I guess I wasn't raised enough British humor.
I guess you didn't have enough influence for Mary Poppins and the
Chimney Sweeps. Well, dude, the occasional Cockney accented ruffian shows up in all the Disney stuff. It's not exclusively British. It's a fallback nasty guy voice, even in America.
All right, fair
Hello
enough.
Now.
So, the two questions from Gorka Morka that we said we would cover in this later, earlier episode. Let's start off with the first one. How do I turn power gamers into role players?
You beat kick them out and you get a role player in.
You beat them with hoses till they submit.
You know, we actually raised kind of a debate on our forum about this because of the fact that there is a presumption, and I actually support this presumption, but I'm going to try to say this neutrally. There's a presumption.
Why bother?
That everyone, because I at least
we would get accused of being opinionated.
Well, I at least I have to set up the debate. That's my job as moderator, you know. But it's like
you don't have a job as moderator.
You know, nine times out of ten, we just dogpile one side of a position, and that's it.
Moderate way, and then we'll make some.
There are firemen out there who might also like bonfires, but that doesn't change the fact that when the bell rings, they still got to put.
All right.
So there is a presumption that role players have sort of a life cycle, kind of like, you know, like you.
Oh, teenagers are
where
really
you
bad
come into the hobby where you are a bad gamer, and basically what you play is a power gamer, strategic war gamer, dungeon crawler, and as time goes on,
you emerge from the hatchery a larva with 10 hit points, but a lot of armor.
And
a cape.
You become, over time,
that's where the armor comes
more
from.
Interested in deep role-playing and dramatic characters and adding complexity to the game and things like that.
But I know
unless you emerge from the chrysalis and you're still just Phil, in which case the mutation did not take.
I mean, I know old dudes like Vietnam veterans.
Skip.
Yes. Who are complete and total power gaming dungeon crawlers, where we describe to him, he's like, oh, what's your typical game like, after he gives us a 5-hour long, mind-numbing gaming story about his demon gnome.
Skip is a good guy, but I think he's still working through Kason every time he sits down to a D&D table.
Well, but see, here's the thing. Would you guys personally describe him as a matured role player?
I would describe him as a matured man, and I don't think that he role plays.
Yeah, see, exactly. Now, yeah, I'll agree with you. Skip's a mature guy. He's a great guy. I have loved hanging out with him.
Sure.
This is not a diss against Skip in any way, shape, or form. But a role player, purely that one aspect of him, how would you describe him?
I don't think he role plays. I mean, I think that he plays a similar yet different game than us. He plays a tactical miniatures game, much like 40K or War Machine or Napoleonic Battles.
Yeah.
Only the difference is in the scale. And instead of having an army with 50, 100, 1,000 miniatures, you have an army of 5 guys.
And that's how this all started.
Yeah.
And do remember that some of these old codgers, like Skip, were in it 30 years ago, back when it got off the ground. So this is their concept of what a game is.
And
it's fine.
And their idea,
I like war games, too.
Yeah, their idea of role-playing is naming their character and coming up with a 5-line background of where they come from and why they kill things.
Yeah, and a stereotype they fit, which is typically a race-profession combination.
Right.
I am an elven archer, and therefore that explains my personality.
Now before barbarian. People get enraged, is there anything morally, ethically wrong with that? Is that bad gaming?
It depends on what kind of game you're in. If you're in a...
It's a game. It
goes back to deciding what kind of game you want to be in. If you guys are in a all political type of game, then the guy who shows up with 2 machine guns and heavy armor, then it is a problem.
Yeah, all right. But is there anything morally, ethically wrong with playing football? And the answer is
yes.
No, there's obviously not. But the point is, that's not what this show is about. And this show has never in its life cycle really espoused power gaming, because quite frankly, it's boring, it's predictable, and I don't think there's a whole lot to really say about
there's
it.
Better war games over in the war game section.
Exactly 100%.
If you
want
to do a dungeon crawl, play an MMO. I mean, at least all the math is automated.
I completely agree. So back to his question of how do I turn power gamers into role players, let's get the two extremes out on the table and then look for useful answers in the middle. The two extremes are, one, of course, kick the person out, and
to me, that's not really an option. I mean, it's just like, okay, we mentioned it, but that's not what we're shooting for.
Well, I don't think that's, in this case, a necessary answer. Yeah. I mean, I think, you occasionally get the guy where this person is destroying your game, he's wrecking your circle of friends, the dude's got to go, but I don't think, in this case, being a power gamer is sufficient offense to...
At that point, him being a power gamer is a secondary effect of him being a douchebag.
Exactly.
There's power gamer and then there's disruptor gamer. It's not the same thing.
You can have a guy who LARPs, has his boffer weapon, doesn't do a single bit of combat, and he has his fake fangs and gets arrested in Denny's, still be a jerk.
And you can have the guy who doesn't even like action gaming. He just brings his machine gun to the political role play because he knows it screws with everyone else.
Yeah.
So the second possibility then would be to placate the person,
mm-hmm.
which now, Chad, I know you've taken this route with Phil at times.
Oh, every single game we play
where you give him the carrot.
Yep. It's the carrot and the stick approach. And, you know, sometimes you got to give him a little bit of stick. You got to, you know, it's like, OK, yo, I'm big, bad dude. And there's the army and I'm going to charge him from behind. And, you know, you try to dissuade him. But if you can't dissuade him and that's what he wants to do, you let him
it's
go
gaming.
In because you know what? The most important thing to a power gamer is their character. And if they lose their character in a stupid way through their own action,
which is the only way they should ever lose a character.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe letting them have a few kills here and there, if that keeps them happy.
Yeah.
Because the ultimate goal of gaming is to enjoy yourself. So if that keeps them happy, then.
Because I tell you what.
Let them do it.
As much of a power gamer as Phil is, he role played. And it, I always talked about how.
Kind of.
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't deep, but he was good. I enjoyed playing with him. But it was a balancing. You had to look at your group and you had to see how everyone was having fun. And you had to dole out the fun in different ways to different people. If Phil would give me role playing, if he would like kind of play ball with me, it sounds really sick, but I would let him kill a couple of people.
Charles Manson over to you.
And, you know, it made him happy and it kind of sickened me. I died a little bit on the inside when I did
you know,
it.
I think backing up a point or two, I think part of what you got to look at here is the person that you're dealing with, because if you are dealing with someone like Skip, mm-hmm. who's a power gamer at heart, that's what they want to do. That's all they are ever going to be. You can't change a leopard's spots. You cannot make this person be.
And you can't make him happy.
Yeah, Skip does not want to roll. Like, we would describe our games. He would ask, what's your games like? And we would describe our characters and the story and the intense dialogue like John and I had. And, you know, we faced the NPC and then John stabbed me in the back. And, you know, it was really interesting. He literally looked at us. I mean, this is a true story. He literally looked at us and said, that's not gaming.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't crawling, it wasn't going into a room, wiping out every single enemy in the room, searching for traps, looting the bodies, finding the secret doors, moving on to the next room, rinse, wash, repeat.
Right.
That, to him, that's gaming.
And with people like that, there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. They want to play a different game. It's just like if you sit down at the table to play a role-playing game, and there's someone who's absolutely hooked on a TV show, and they don't own a TiVo, and they want to watch that TV show, you can't keep them at the gaming table.
If World of Warcraft comes out and destroys three different game efforts.
Right.
Not that that happened to Chad and I.
What?
Huh?
Or Age of Conan may be about to do that again.
Yeah.
But,
well, I don't have a game now, so Age of Conan, ahoy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are definitely those incorrigible guys who they know what they want to do, and that's what they're going to do. But for the person who's just inexperienced and he sees the easy pleasure that he gets from maximizing what he can do with the character build. And, you know,
that's an interesting point. To me personally, I'm not a math guy. I'm not a min maxer. I'm not a numbers cruncher. I'm not even a rules guy. Right. And you say, and you're absolutely right, is that the ROLL min maxing thing mm-hmm. is the easy way out. It doesn't take a lot of cognitive thing to come up with a character and a storyline and play it out and stick to it. But to me, that is the hard way out, doing all the algebra, making all the thing and going through and making the character to where.
Well, it's easy for one simple reason. Once you've cracked the nut, you're done.
Yeah.
Because once you have figured out what it takes to min-max a particular class, once you've figured out what it is you can do, particularly in D&D, the monsters are notorious for having panic buttons. Mm-hmm. Once you've figured that out, you're on cruise control.
And one of the tragedies of third edition is those starter kits and the PHB. Yeah. They're the best. You don't need to think if you just want to look at those and take them.
I wouldn't say they're the best, but they're all good.
Well, the point being, though, as opposed to someone who's actually role-playing, getting into character, where every situation that comes up, assuming the game master's telling a good story, challenges you. Mm-hmm. Because you have to put yourself in the mind of another individual and think, how would he or she respond to that? What would this person do? What would this person think? And if you're really into this, how would this change them as a person? What are the lasting modifications? So I would say
say you have that person in your group. Should there be a certain style of game you should go for? Because what I'm thinking of is you have that new person in your group and they're really a min-max or a power gamer, but they're willing to, you know, try it your way. Does that mean you should play a game like Exalted or D&D or some number crunching.
Well, you should never play Exalted.
Or Exalted, because it's a super power game. You have huge amounts of power and stuff. Or some game where you could really work the system. Or should you play a simpler system, like a storyteller system or a Spirit of the Century or something?
Once again, if we go back to the assumption, this is not a skip. This is not someone who is stuck in this style of game. This is someone who could see it some other way. I do think you have to deal with the fact that you are still radically changing the way this person understands a hobby.
Mm-hmm. Show them it's fun. And don't try to persuade them on intellectual grounds. Do it and have them say, oh, I want to do that.
But I think that's the whole thing. You have to show them the reward for that other style of play. Show them the richness they can get from having a long-term developed character, and the more they get inside that person's head, the more emotional investment they have in that character.
Yeah, if you're always trying to kick the guy's butt into doing it, you're never going to have fun, and they're really never going to like it. You've got to get to the point where they're pulling their own butt.
And that's why I think maybe stunning the person, like if they're a power gamer, suddenly whipping out a story-based pony game.
Yeah.
I know a pony game.
I do, too. But
does it involve collectible trade
yes,
cards?
Yes, it does.
I can't wait for the Belsera RPG to come out. We are so good.
I actually already wrote it. I'm going to sell it to anyone who will buy it.
Really?
Let them deal with the copyright infringement.
Are we all going to play anthropomorphic horses?
No, you're just going to play a damn pony. There's no anthro in love.
No magic powers. No nothing.
No.
You're just cute.
Just don't run in the Kentucky Derby or you'll die.
Well, never mind.
All right.
But can I be a jungle pony?
No.
Here's the things. Thank you for...
3-year-old thoroughbred.
Thinking through my... I'm not a building. That'd really suck.
No.
No, no, you're a girl pony.
Oh.
All ponies are girls.
Yes.
I'm some in the hag.
No, there's some not girl ponies. Just
they're the bad
not a
guys,
lot.
Though.
Yeah, that's true. No, they're the enemies.
All right. So, thinking back to my own experience as a role player, I started out as a power gamer, became a deeper role player.
Oh, the maps.
And for me, what it was is it was kind of like what Matt was saying, that you just have to show the person the other side. Show them there is some kind of entertainment on the other side. When I sat down to make a character and to play this game, of course, I'm shopping powers. I'm trying to structure this combat badass. I'm trying to figure out. And the game master's just asking these questions that had never crossed my mind before. Well, who is this person? What is this person?
At what point was that? Was that with Paul?
That was with Paul's group, where he first
said... Which is amazing, because, and to bore people with these stories, Paul's group was a real two-sided demon. It was like, on one side, they were really into, like you said, they're asking, well, why does your character do what? They're very touchy-feely with it. Why do you want to... Why is this character like this? Who is your character? And on the other side, they were ultra power combat, kill.
The game, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing. This is just a style of game.
Yeah.
They were all anime.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was the expectation sitting down to it. And you can take anime where you have these really deep, involved characters, but when it comes to the combat scene, nobody launches just one missile.
Right. Because that's so boring.
Yeah, exactly. And so...
it has to be over 9,000 missiles.
So... I can think that the first thing was that somebody just showed me there was another side to it.
Yeah.
I sat down, people started asking me those questions. When we got into the game, suddenly the game wasn't all killing. The game master, the other players, there was internal party dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
There was people talking about the struggles they were having within their character. And it didn't stop the story, but there was this other side to the story where you went through times where there was no relevant killing to be done.
I think you said a very important word in there, Dan, and that word was game master. I mean, you actually have to have someone who...
That's our word of the day. That was my joke. Keep going.
I watched Pee Wee's Playhouse. So.
Do-do-do-do-do. You have to have a game master who actually has a story that's going to capture that player, and sometimes that means writing the story specifically to capture a particular element of the power gamer's character. You know, bring him along, give him the ticket for the train.
The second thing that I found that helped, and I didn't do this, wasn't so much with me, because I kind of fell into this other group style, but I had to use this with someone else in my group who was a big power gamer, is you stop rewarding it.
Yeah,
that you hit a point where if they want to go out and kill things, and I'm not saying, once again, you got to do this slowly. You can't do this all at once. But you hit a point where if most of the game is role-playing based as opposed to combat based, And if suddenly being the badass is less useful than being the negotiator, well, what is a power gamer all about? Well, they want to quickly accomplish things. They want to be the center of attention. They want to be unstoppable.
They want to be the one-man hero.
Right. And suddenly when to be the one-man hero rather than knock 10 men down, you have to talk 10 men down. That changes the desire. That you basically change what gets the reward in the game. And you've got to be careful once you not do this to the point you ostracize the person or just frustrate the person. But if you keep rewarding bad behavior, they're going to keep performing bad behavior.
Yeah, with Phil, though, that was very difficult. But yeah, I agree with you, but it was very difficult because if Phil didn't get his carrot, his kill...
I didn't give him his damn carrot.
You gave him stick. It was all stick with you.
But he asked for stick day in and day out.
You wanted it.
You know, I think in some cases
he wanted it.
He would get sullen. He would get kind of weepy, and he'd be like, okay.
I can't tell the catapult.
Hey, he's so just mean. Like, okay, fine. Here's a shiny gun thing.
To this day, if we do an entire 4-6 hour session where it's all role playing and there's not a single amount of combat, I get bored.
Interesting, because I've run multiple games in a row without any discernible combat whatsoever.
Just from time to time, I just want to roll some dice and blow some up.
I'm kind
of Warcraft.
I'm somewhere between the two where I like some combat, but I don't like a combat heavy game. I think one fight per session and a short fight, I'm not talking a 3-hour epic battle.
Oh, Luke.
Is sufficient for me. But
you know, he blames you, you blame him, and I don't know who's responsible.
It's Luke.
Okay.
Sometimes you also got to look past the fact that they're a power gamer and find out what's really enamoring them, because in some cases it's the power, but in other cases there's something a little bit deeper going on. Talking about this same guy from before.
Who is it?
This was Tim. What I found out with Tim was that really what he wanted to be was special and unique.
Yeah.
And that oftentimes he'd express that through being a power gamer, because of course being the most powerful man in the party makes you special and unique.
And it's simple and it's fast way to get there.
And what I found was that if I sat down with him at character development and I came up with other ways to make his character really stand out and really be a unique asset to the party without necessarily being the combat dynamo, that he was equally happy with that. And so sometimes you just got to figure out what it is that's motivating the individual to be the power gamer in the first place.
If you're the GM, do you think that you should be, like, before the game even starts, before characters are even made, do you think that you should be sneaky about it and say, okay, I'm going to use all these tips and stuff, and I'm going to try and manipulate, not manipulate in a bad way, but, you know, kind of steer this guy around to my way of thinking? Or do you think that you should be totally upfront about it, sit down with him and make a character with him and say, this is what we're trying to go for?
I think you should be upfront.
Because not like that with Phil.
I'd say
he wouldn't go for it, depends, but I think you should be upfront.
It depends on the person. In an ideal world, I'd like to agree with John. In the real world, I think you've got to be kind of sneaky about it, because you sit down, like my frustration with a lot of these power gamers I've had, is you sit down with them and either they just don't want to hear it or they don't even think they're doing it.
Right.
And so I have to be like, well, okay, then we'll just take the back
road in. They
think
they're gamers and gaming, but they're really dead on the inside.
Precisely.
I say, why not do both? Sit down and be upfront with the player and say, hey, this is the kind of game I want to run. And if they comply,
I agree.
And if they don't, then you can turn the screws a little
bit. And you can drop the tricks in when you're giving them a straight up face-to-face convo about how this is going to be a little more role-playing, and, you know, maybe you should do this, that, and that for your character this time around.
Counselor, you said convo.
I did say convo.
Now, what if the person actively resists it? You've talked to them, you're up front, and you're doing the sneaky thing, and you're in the middle of the game, and they walk into the bar, and they shoot the barkeep, and they walk into the store, and they shoot the store, and they walk in front of the king to save the princess, and
if
they have a gun for some
reason. If you told them that this game was going to be pretty rough on the whole verisimilitude thing, then the cops show up and drag him off.
You punish him.
Do you do it in a way that breaks your game? I mean, obviously
no,
not.
You do it in a way that very well could break his character.
Well, you as the game master have many, many, many options. Yeah. Right. And I think there are ways you can spank the person without destroying the game or destroying their character. The king throws them in the dungeon for the next 2 hours of the game session. There are things you can do. I remember with Tim, where in the Skies of Glass game, I wounded his character, didn't kill his character,
yeah,
but got his
yeah.
character that rotting infection.
Oh, a permanent wound is worse than death because they can't just re-roll over.
Yeah. Exactly. But, and precisely. You know
what he did? What's
that? Three gaming sessions in a row, he was whining about, this character's worthless. I need to roll a new character. I've got a new character. I need a new character. It's like,
you did that. Should have thought of that before you did the stupid thing.
Because I gamed with him. That's exactly what he sounded like.
And his character was fine. He had a permanent injury to the left foot. But otherwise, his character was perfectly intact.
His character wasn't fine. He couldn't kick as much ass.
Yeah, precisely. And so you take away the
You put a -1 on his dexterity-related stuff, and that was it?
Yeah, that was about it.
I don't think it was even that. I think it was just he was slowed down a little bit. And
slowing your movement speed is worse than a -1, man. If you can't get there to begin with, you can't even roll for it. That's the secret genius of the barbarian class in 3, I think. You're saying, Matt?
No, I'm agreeing. Okay. The movement is very important in a tactical game.
Movement and initiative, dude.
That's why you're here.
Get there and get there first.
But that being said, you know, in a game where it's a mix of role-playing and combat, having a limp like that, really all you lose is cool points, which is probably what he objected to the most.
But if you lose enough cool points, suddenly you're cool again on the other end of it.
Yeah, technically, the guy with one eye or the guy with the limp, I mean, role player
you're playing
spins
in
that.
An alien with Down syndrome who also has leukemia.
Well, the Down syndrome alien thing is a little far, but Chad, tell me the last time I ran a Superman in a game you ran or played with.
When was the last time I ran a game that you were in where you didn't come up to me and said, okay, by about game 5, I want to die.
Yeah, well, that too. But I started off with the broken arm, and then I died.
Oh, yeah, it was a definite scale up to death and many variations to there.
If you're going
to
go out with a big boom, sometimes it can be amusing, but mostly it's painful.
And he never wanted to go out with a big boom. He wanted to go out as a coward.
I went out as a coward with a big boom a couple times. Well, but yes.
Yeah. You have variations on it.
I think to me, the final punchline here is there is no one size fits all solution. You've got to know the person. You've got to know what who is this person? What motivates them? Why are they a power gamer to begin with? And from there, you can choose, okay, I can talk with this person. I've got to manipulate this person. Just change the nature of the game, change the nature of the rewards, work with the rest of your group just to start.
Basically, variation of carrot and stick.
Yeah.
I mean, different levels of carrot, different levels of stick.
And figuring out what the carrot and what the stick is. That for me, when I sat down with Paul's group for the first time and got introduced to this idea of role playing a character, for me I saw the fun that everybody else was having. And I wanted to
That's my one main point. Mm-hmm. Don't fight them. Don't force it. Say you have to role play because everyone else wants you to.
See, that's
show
another
them
good
it's fun.
Point. If you have one guy who's a power gamer and you have five guys who are like role players, it's very easy. If you have five power gamers and one role player and you're trying to change the other five guys,
it's going
to
be a long slope. Well, see, and I've been on that side of it.
You better be the GM.
I've been on that side of it too, because after gaming with Paul's group, Chad, you and I tried to bring that back to our other gaming group, which was still stuck in that power gaming mode. And it was a long, hard transition.
And it never transferred 100%. Over it, we never got the other group. I mean, at least that with the, I mean, it took years. I still don't think we ever got the other group to that level of role playing.
I think
maybe a different
some
way.
Individuals, yes, but yeah, certainly though, we did get the most of the way there. But yeah, it took a lot of time, and it took a lot of at times we just had to throw out the scenes where it was just okay, here's some people role playing, and either you have a character or you don't. If you don't, you're not real involved here.
You know, that's actually one thing that I think we neglected was the group dynamic. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you go into a group that's mostly role players, then you're going to get mostly role playing. And you go the other way, it's very difficult. But if you can do things to change the group dynamic, whether that's changing GMs, changing systems.
I love you so much, I'm going to change you.
Yes, thank you.
No problem.
For that. But if you're playing a game like D&D, it's really set up where it's, you kill the monsters, you take the loot, you get more stuff so you can kill more monsters.
The rules are set up for
that. Yeah, that was an advertising tagline. In fact, it might still be for them.
Yeah.
Kill monsters, get loot.
Kill more monsters,
Which,
get better
don't get
loot.
Me wrong. I enjoy loot. But if you're trying to show a new experience to your players, do things to change the dynamic. Play in a different place. Use a different GM. Use a different system.
Actually, the more I think about it, maybe maybe it's, I think it's Chad, you threw it out earlier, maybe using a different system is part of the way to go. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you need to go all the way to the extreme of switching over to a complete storyteller diceless system.
No,
but having
that
said
ever.
That, I'll tell you right now that you put me in a D&D game, and in an average D&D game, I will fall right back in my power gaming mode, because mm-hmm. that's what the gaming system rewards.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's what the gaming system encourages. Now, not to say that you every game you run in D&D has to be a power game.
Gary Gygax rises from the dead and Demon Gygax forces you to dungeon crawl.
But you know, the point being that some games, they just encourage that. And it's very... I take a look at Battletech. If you want to actually hit in combat, you kind of have
you got to min-max.
Yeah, you got to min-max. And you have to play as... create a certain kind of character, and it rewards a certain kind of play.
But you know what? I mean, that gets into, like, if you have experienced role players, I mean, just the short thing is, if you have experienced role players, it doesn't matter. You can play a power game, a storytelling game, whatever. But yeah, I do have to say that if you have an inexperienced role player and somebody you're trying to convert over, you probably don't want to go for the min-max game to start out with.
Right.
Because it gets them off on the wrong foot.
And probably also look at the plot line. For years in our group, the power gaming group, we had what we later came to call the video game plot line.
Yeah.
Where you start out with...
there's seven things you need, then the boss.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's the then the boss thing. It's basically you start out with a vague objective and a vague reason to be there. Your character just fights from left to right, beating up weaker enemies, gaining power along the way, until eventually you get to the boss, you kill the boss, and that's where you get the best reward. He's the one who drops the +2 sword. And
then the game is over. Damn it.
Yeah, or at least that plot line's over, or then you move on to the next level that might have an even more powerful stage boss. And that
Gandalf drops the whole Triforce. But guess what? Once he's dead, the game is over.
Yeah, and once, if you play that kind of game style, that right there.
Did I just
there,
call Ganon Gandalf?
You did.
Yes.
Hell, wow.
It was a very interesting crossover you had set up.
Triforce Gandalf. That
well,
might
you
be
will sorry, not no, wait a pass, Link.
There was
grumble,
Ganon.
Grumble, grumble. You will not pass.
There was Ganondorf, so maybe you just slurred that together to Ganondolf.
Gandolfendorf.
No, I
screwed it up, and I knew it.
I'm trying to help you out there.
You know, with all this criticism of simple video game plots and standard kind of D&D tropes, I still don't think that's necessarily a bad place to start. If your GM is inexperienced, if your players are inexperienced, there's all kinds of material that really fit this mold pretty well. But it's just a thing, if you're going to keep with the hobby for over a long time period, I think either you got to graduate, or, you know, you're forever going to be playing WoW with pen and paper.
Now, to me, this is the hard question. We're kind of taking this from the perspective that you're the DM and you're trying to convert one of your players. What if you're a player trying to convert a fellow player? Not necessarily the GM. The GM would be kind of an unassailable position. I mean, that's somebody you got.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. I've been in that position.
Yeah.
The only thing that I found is you can try and start role playing with the person.
Then they punch in the arm.
I found it. I have yet to successfully pull it off. I've been in some games where I'm sitting there and everyone around me is either not role playing or is not role playing well. And so I try to strike something up, and typically the other people just don't get it. They're like, huh, yeah, that's an interesting point.
You mean like every night on our mode after I leave?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Precisely that. Where we're sitting there in the tavern or whatever, and I try to strike up a conversation about something more than killing, and it lasts all of 3 seconds before the person turns to the GM and says, okay, I start killing.
And I think it's that time when you whip out the player-to-player relationship, you know, like the group template, you know, we're brothers, or I'm your Padawan, or whatever. You can pull someone into the story. It's a lot easier to grab onto a pre-existing bond.
I recommend making fun of them out of character. Just humiliate them into the story.
I
pretty much do that to friend and enemy alike, I can do that.
And it works, so it's not the best way to go necessarily morally, but yeah, it does work. I have to agree, though, that grabbing onto character relationship stories sometimes help. Mm-hmm. If you draw the person into your own character where they are somehow responsible for you or tied to you, if you force them, I don't say force, but if you design the character such that one has an interest in the other, that right there may keep them from just blowing off whatever it is you have to say and allow you to bring up some deeper role playing moments. You know, is this what Dad would have really wanted? And
you know what? I've always thought that characters who are tied together like that anyway are more interesting and fun to play.
Yeah,
I mean, that's why we say the character template.
Yeah, go back to, was it episode one with the group template?
Yeah, I think
template.
Two or three.
Yeah, the first two or three episodes with the group template, and it's still, I think.
I mean, look at you and I in our Sunday game. You know, we haven't gamed together in years. First thing we do when we jump in, it's like, oh, how's our characters connected?
Yeah, exactly.
Because we're like bending the Game Master's plot over the table.
Yeah, we bend his setting over the table as well.
But unless you're playing a Yahweh-based role-playing game.
What?
What? You mean Yowie?
Yes.
No. Yahweh.
Totally.
Yeah,
there's, you know,
there's a minor gap between Yahweh and Yahweh.
You know what's hilarious is that they're two
Yahweh,
totally different concepts.
You know, the funny thing is,
there are still
now Daniel Perez can't delete this episode because it's sacrilege.
Wow. Sorry, DP.
I hope you like the hard drive this is on, because it's going to stay with you forever.
Anyway, all right, let's move on to Gorka's second question. We couldn't cover it episode 100.
Are all of our questions for this episode from the same guy?
Yeah, both of these are from the same guy.
He's a forum user. He's on all the time.
Well, like I said, we promised that if you sent in a reasonable question for episode 100, we would answer it. And these are reasonable questions. They were just too big.
You know his icon is a cockroach with a bazooka?
No. Oh, that guy.
Yes.
Yeah, no, he's cool.
And that's why he's from like Scandinavia or Sweden or some European S country. I'm sorry, I don't remember what's not in front of me, but yeah.
Oh, no, I will. But hey, like I said we would answer the questions, and he asked reasonable questions, so we will answer them. The second question, now he actually asked four questions, and the other two we did answer in episode 100.
The other question is, why is Chad so right all the time?
That was exactly what it was.
Yes.
Wait till 100, Chad, you'll see.
But the fourth question he asked, which is the second that we are going to answer here, is how do I add spice to the setting's backstory?
Well, the spice must flow.
The spice channel must flow. That was Matt, by the way, before this all started. Credit where credit's due.
I feel very strongly about that, because I can't tell you how many times throughout school I would come up with these great one-liners, but I didn't have the guts to say them out loud, so I would whisper them, and then the class clown next to me would say them out loud, and everyone thought he was extremely clever.
I used to do that until I didn't.
Yeah, well, same thing here. But me, that point where I didn't actually came after school. I was actually extremely.
Oh, mine came at like 10.
I was extremely well behaved all through school, even in college. I really didn't do anything. All my
back in my Scholars Bowl days.
You played Scholar Bowl?
Oh, yeah.
Hell yes.
I was the designated guesser. Like, you got some stupid crap that you don't have the guts to say.
Dude. I was the captain, and I had a DG. You guys were very, very useful. Hey, saved us space and sometimes got the answer right.
We took the gold.
I'm All-State Missourian, brother, 2004. Really?
I don't think ours went on to, at least when I was playing it was in the Academic Olympics. I don't think it went on to a state. They played it, either that or it was state to begin with, one of the two.
Skipped class so much, my absences were in the double digits.
Yeah, I did. That was college for me.
Third in state in Kansas.
My attendance looked like a hand of Uno.
You know, it's so weird. Like, all through like our public school, you were the model student and I was the slacker. And then when we both went to college, it completely changed.
As a student, I became a much bigger slacker.
Wait, Chad, you were a model college student?
Dude, I got like a 3.0 average in college, yeah.
Cool. Second time around.
The second time
around. Oh, we're talking the Vatterott time around. Yeah, okay, I had you back in SEMO, dropping out immediately.
That wasn't SEMO, it was Southwest.
Southwest, okay. Where I dropped out immediately. Yeah. But yeah, Vatterott, when I was
you were paying for it and you were 10 years older. Yes.
Well, I could do a whole bonus episode of my views of the American educational system.
Oh, yes.
But see,
I've gotten several bonus episodes worth in GIM.
But one I will throw in right there is that I think schooling is very different when you choose to do it rather than do it under social pressure.
Oh, yes.
That why does, at least with here in America, and I'm only commenting on America because that's the only place I've lived and gone to school. Not say this isn't true in other countries, but the reason you go to college is because that's what you do after high school.
Actually, it's because we want money.
Whereas when you go back in your adult life, you suddenly want to be there and understand why you're there, and it's a radically different experience.
Come on, if you're 18 into community college,
I don't know, man, give me some credit.
It's a disco with books, all right?
We're talking averages, not John
geniuses.
G.
Okay.
Oh, John G. He's got from Johnny
genius.
G to Johnny Genius.
That's right. Yeah. Jimmy Neutron.
Oh, I mean, like, I was a total and complete slacker all through my public school. I mean, I barely passed, and I graduated high school with the minimum number of credits required by the state. is ridiculous. I mean, but when I went to Vaterot years later, I was paying for it. It was on my own time.
I remember you talking about enlisting, well, or enrolling in Vaterot before you did it.
Yeah.
Like you, debating it.
Well, you had life goals.
Yeah.
You knew it's the same thing here.
I walked into class. People are jacking around and I'm like, okay, come on, people. I'm paying, you know, meter's running here. Let's go. Let's get our learn on.
Exactly. And I'm the same way. I dropped out of college after about 2.5 years of it because I didn't care. Yeah. If I went back today, I'd bust my ass because it's for things I want to do and I know why I'm there. And I really wish that we would put two things we would change about college. One is get rid of core curriculum completely.
Yeah.
I think it should be 4 years of focus on your major. You had your core studies in high school, let it be over with. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I think there should be a 1 to 2 year break between high school and college. Let you get out there, try some stuff, see what you really like. So when you go back to college, you know why you're there.
That would,
well, I graduate from college as of last Saturday when this
you would have
so
to have a complete societal change.
Well, yeah. Dan, I like your idea of the 1 or 2 year break. I regret not doing some of the social programs that were available to me because I was so deep in college debt. Like, I would have loved to have gone and done like the Peace Corps or something, you know, go to a poor impoverished country and build ditches and wells for a couple of years. The other thing is,
I thought you said that you were going to go to a porn impoverished country for 1 or 2 years
and bring them porn
and dig ditches.
Feel like the Santa Claus of pornography.
Wow, you're all heart, Matt. You're just a giver, aren't you?
actually, my point was,
only when he's paid.
If you go and experience a third world country when you're 18 and see what hard work actually is, when you show up at work or when you show up at college, which is now your work at 20. You got some motivation.
No, we all know exactly how little work we're doing when we get there.
Well, it's hard to make it matter.
Well, see, I'm not that I'm against it. Believe me, I'm all in favor of charitable work and things like that. But I guess more what I'm getting at is I went to college originally on a biology major, switched to English. I now own a technology company. I do a podcast. My interests are in historical and religious studies. What the heck was I going to do with a BA in English? I mean, it's had no relevance.
What do you do with a BA in English?
But on the other hand, from 20 to 30, I was a bum.
Right.
And then I went to a technical college, got a Bachelor of Science in Computer
Technology.
Chad,
you were the hardest working man on the front end. That said, that's still pretty much a bum.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Well, before you knew me there, I was a total bum. Okay. And I work for Scott Trade using my degree.
Right. And yeah, really exactly. And if I went back to college now, it'd probably be mostly for personal enrichment. Yeah. But nonetheless, I'd be fascinated in the course material. I'd want to talk to the professors, get as much as I could out of it.
Johnny G, I do have to say, I'm exceedingly jealous of your worthless arts degree. Your
dual BA degree, history of political science, is not worthless. It has been very personally enriching, Daniel.
It's because you can't start out with a law degree.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, I'm not saying that
you can't go straight from high school to law
school. If you were to try and get a job with your current degree,
it's
just hard. You'd have a hard time.
Back to the non-discussion factor.
Yeah.
I thought it was like being a doctor, a real doctor, not a Luke doctor, where I thought you had to get a BA before you could go to med school.
You have to have a 4-year baccalaureate degree to go to med school or law school.
I'll say, at least in Missouri. I'm sure it's different.
Oh, it's everywhere.
But to practice law, do you actually need a degree or do you just have to
practice
the bar?
If you want to go to a 3-year law school,
you don't even have to graduate from law school to practice law in Missouri.
No, even in Missouri, you're looking at 7 years.
Yeah,
of
you could choose to represent yourself.
You can just be a super smart guy who reads the books and just takes the test.
The age of Andrew Jackson.
The Frank Abagnale thing is cool in the movies, but I don't think it works.
All right, so anyways, getting back to Gorka Vorka's question. That we've gone
10 minutes later, back into role-playing games.
Okay, off the Charlie Rose discussion.
All right, so back to how do I add spice to a setting's backstory?
I will so many Dune
sex,
jokes.
Drugs, rock and roll, and kill people.
All right, well, let me add one big don't before we start the do's. Don't rely on the fact that you know a ton about it, because if you can sit there and spin on and on and on about the number of factoids you know or the number of novels you've read, that right there does not bring alive whatsoever the setting to the characters.
No.
Or players, rather. It bores them and overwhelms them. That is not the way to handle it. Now, having said that, I think what you need to focus on is what is important, what is relevant to the characters. And you can define that in two ways. One, where are they and what are they doing right this moment? If they're in a particular town, know a lot about the town, know a lot about the people in the town. Don't bore them with lectures and factoids, but instead bring it to life. Let them see and experience these things. And secondly, and this is one that really grates on me with a lot of GMs I've played under, know the backstories of your characters. If a player took the time to say that my character's from this place and did these things, and here's all these unanswered questions in his background, he's designed a great character, and you just ignore that and tell a different story, and you don't start saying, you know what? This guy's brother's gone missing.
Yeah, that's annoying.
And but there's this great bad guy in the backstory who would just do that kind of thing. Here's an opportunity to really make that setting come alive and pop to the players. And if you're not taking advantage of that, you're just throwing away gold, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, if you ignore people's background and just go forward with your script villain, then you are passing up opportunity after golden opportunity.
Yeah.
Because some players, and I'm looking to my left here, don't appreciate getting on the railroad.
No. Especially and when you don't have to pander to every single orcs killed my parents story out there.
No.
But a good player will leave something that you can bite on.
Yeah.
Like you should bite on it.
Yeah. Like even a horrible, terrible GM like Luke will, you know, kind of pull in stuff from your character's background.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, think of it, you don't even have to think it's like, oh, well, this is the proper way to do this. Take it as the lazy man's way out. That's what I
always
did.
Half a plot, Mark.
Yeah, exactly.
Fill in the other half and you're done.
Well, one thing that I would like to really emphasize, and maybe put this a little more succinctly than I did before, is that the spice of a backstory, it's the experience. It's not how much there is. It's not how much there is to know. It's not what's going on. It's what the characters and the players experience as they're playing the game. That's what they're going to take away with them about the backstory. Now, granted, that does require some amount of depth, because if you just have a village with a generic barkeep and there's nothing in particular going on, that's not going to go over real well. I mean, you need to take the time.
I mean, unless it's just a starting point. Generic village A37 is the village that you're going to spend 10 seconds there and then you leave. That's one thing.
And of course, then I'd say, you know, ask the question, why were you there in the first place? Why not start somewhere else that did matter? But if you at least need to know something about the place, have some amount of knowledge, have some proper nouns in your vocabulary ready to go. But I don't think that's where you get the spice from. It's from how you present it.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, I wouldn't focus completely on story. The way you said it, that I think you hit on something important. Language, not necessarily based on volume of words, but just, you know, the descriptive phrases that you use, the way you describe your NPCs. If you want to go to the extra effort, if you're modeling your towns after a specific historical period, you know, go out and find some appropriate music. And music isn't something I use very often in my games, but occasionally if you're going to a desert culture, you know, that parallels our current Middle East or fantasy thousand.
You play
and
a screwed up version of the Star Wars Cantina song.
You know,
like
what,
in Team America.
You know what I always did to add a little bit of zazz to my game is that Google is wonderful. We used email, and most of us use Gmail, to communicate, and then Google image search. I would tell each of the characters, I want you to, you know, do your character, I make your character, and then I want you to find a picture of your character on Google image search. Could be anything, as long as somehow the picture tells you, like, this is your character.
Right.
Not necessarily this is exactly what he looks like, but just presents your character in some way. And then I would turn around and I would find pictures that either looked like or presented to the feel of the major NPCs. And we would email them back and forth. And then when we graduated to forums and stuff, I would put them all up in the forums. And then the locations, because medieval, we were doing a medieval game, and that's really easy to find stuff for, more so than like an alien spaceship. But pictures of castles and ruins and throne rooms and stuff. And it's really, at least I hope for the character's sake, because nobody ever did it for me, is that when I say, okay, you guys go into the dining hall of the castle, and I start describing it, and they can call up in their mind the picture that I posted on the forum of the dining hall that adds in all the little details and stuff. So you don't have to go like outrageous for it. You don't have to have a pictorial tour of your castle and all your characters down to the chambermaid. But
yeah, in addition to the pictures, there's a subtext to what you're saying that I think is incredibly important. Which is
you
as a game master need to be excited about the setting yourself.
Yeah.
If the setting does not ring your bell, guess what?
Yeah.
You cannot convey any kind of spice or excitement when you yourself find it boring. Yeah, or a
game master has to be 10 times as excited as the players because you're going to be doing 10 times.
And you have to convey that excitement.
Same thing happened with Luke in our game. I mean, as much as we make fun of each other on this, right. This is not me making fun of him. His Deadland game was fantastic. We were all getting into our characters and he ended it. And he didn't end it at the end of the plot. He ended it right in the middle and he said, you know, I'm sorry, guys, but I've just run Deadlands too much. I'm tired of it. I'm burnt out on it. I'm not having fun. And so we were like, well, dude, if you're not having fun, then that means it's not going to be a good game and we're not going to force you to do something you don't want to do. The game's just going to die anyway. So let's move on.
Are really, really understanding players.
We're Care Bears. What can we say?
I guess you are. You need to play more PvP.
What? Dude, they don't let
Speaking
me.
Of PvP, Age of Conan. It'll be out by the time this drops.
Yeah, when this drops, the Age of Conan.
I wish I knew a server name because that could direct you there to join our Death Squad army.
Yeah,
I'm having a feeling that
Duck
when...
Duck Squad? Is that the...
Death Squad.
Oh. I'm having a feeling that when the game drops, John, you are going to just pick a server and then you're going to get, you know, minimize the window, get on the forums. This is my character's name. This is what's
Well, that's exactly what we intend to do. Yes. When the game releases, we are going to immediately, as quickly as we can, post our names in the server. So be watching that if you want to be a part of
the Fear the Boot army will stomp a server.
Well, and from what I understand, we have a lot of people from Fear the Boot and from the Mud who are interested in forming a mega army.
Isn't this episode going to drop the same day as the server goes live?
Thereabouts, yeah.
That could be. Maybe one day later.
So perhaps in the show notes.
Yeah, I may release a little quick announcement.
Or even a big banner on the front page.
Yeah, so anyway, point B, the second, or...
Oh,
second,
by the way, Shannon is probably going to join the
excellent.
Guild.
I'm pleased to hear that. I just said second, and that's really probably not my second point at all. But
that's a Dan list.
My nth point here is there is no such thing as canon.
Yeah.
When you pick up a setting...
I agree.
Ooh, I don't know.
Well, here's
talking.
All right, let me
make a Dan caveat.
I think you can get to a point where you've changed so much. Why are you playing the game anymore?
Right.
If you're playing Star Wars without the Force, why are you playing Star Wars?
Yeah, no Imperials.
My Star Wars people are not killing Darth Vader in their third game session.
Right.
Set before Empire Strikes Back.
But having said that, for example, when I run Forgotten Realms. As I've said before, my favorite area to run is Sembia from one of the previous editions where they had not really defined it. And so I would look at what it said about Sembia and I would invent my own stuff and change things around. I'd look at what the characters had written. Most of the stories I tell center around a keep and a little village that don't even exist in the Forgotten Realms canon. And I realize you can do this to a point where you are so unfaithful to the game that why are you even playing that game anymore? But at the same time, do not feel so shackled by the established story that every time someone says, okay, well, I walk down the street, what kind of buildings do I see?
Let me look it up.
Yeah, and you're fumbling around through books. Well, I walk into this building. What's the name of the guy who runs it? Oh, gee, it's here. No, it's not on this page.
Or, you know what, though?
Just freaking come up with something.
Even if you have the books memorized and you can boom, 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 lay that information out, you're, to me... And I'm a touchy-feely storytelling GM. You're doing exactly that. You're laying out the information. You're not, you know...
You still got to bring it alive, even if
you
know
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, things like, for example, if I'm running a sci-fi game, mm-hmm. and the characters, they walk into a particular place, and there's supposed to be a human that runs it, but I know that one of the characters in the party has this real agitation towards aliens. So just to create an interesting role-playing moment, suddenly the establishment is run by an alien. Now.
There's a Labian behind the counter.
Yeah.
A Labian.
Oh, it's one of those bars.
Yes. You walked into the wrong one.
So I was,
or the right one.
Perhaps.
It's kind of like with our first thing, the power gaming thing. You got to know the player. I would say the best way to add spice to a setting is to know the characters. To really make sure that, because as I keep saying, it's not about what's there. It's about the experience people have and what's there. Take a look at any review of any hotel, any cruise line, any resort in the world, and read how much people loved or hated it based on the experience they had there. And they were all in the same damn place. It was the same setting for everybody.
100 good ideas that are stuck in your head in an empty sack is worth a sack.
Yeah. Precisely.
You said sack.
So I guess it kind of goes back to that chance prepares the favored mind
chance favors the prepared mind?
Something like
fortune
that.
Fortune favors the brave?
All that crap.
Okay.
Wow. That was like a word scrabble.
Here's
I was going back to the Romans.
Here is the point.
Point incoming.
If you have done a lot of preparation and really know your setting and really know your character's story and actually have developed a fair amount of information for the story and have a little bit of flexibility in it, it gives you options for when you're having trouble getting the characters involved.
Matt, I notice you like pulling the labels off of beer.
I do that too.
What I do?
There's something romantic about a completely bare bottle of alcohol.
Well, that and the hard K, it's a wax cover, so it's kind of it's a weird technique.
You know,
I
used to do that until Sheryl Crow had a song about pulling labels off of beer, and that just kind of destroyed it.
I missed that one. And don't tell me about it because I don't want to.
Binned bottle caps.
All she wants
as much
do.
As I've bent the two or three bottle caps on the table in front of me. I bend them in half. I don't know why.
All right. So anyway,
and in fact, I've cut myself terribly before doing that.
But hey, why stop now?
Yeah, exactly. You know what else?
But Mr. Gorka Morka, there's the answer to those two questions. Your other two, which were much shorter to answer, will be in episode 100.
He has more?
Yes, but they were much easier to answer questions.
What were they? Just out of curiosity. Because I'll never listen to the episode.
Okay, well, I'll tell you when we're done after this recording's over. As for the rest of you guys, we hope to catch you in Age of Conan. Or if not, then we will catch you for the next episode. So, see you then.
See ya.
Bye.
Cheers.
Damn it.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to FearTheBoot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at FearTheBoot.com.